This is On the Other Hand, a podcast sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. Stay with us as we talk to another leader in Arkansas who works across differences to get things done and to bring us closer together.
Hello and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, April Chatham Carpenter, and I'm here today with my co-host, Glenn White. On our podcast, Glenn and I interview community members in Arkansas who help work toward solutions across various political or other divides, or who in other ways reach across various divisions within our community. Glenn, please introduce us to our guest for today.
Okay, I will, April, and thanks. Today, we are thrilled to be speaking with Marquis Hunt. Marquis is well known in our community and beyond as an exceptional musician, a man of faith and a spiritual leader, an author, and an intellectual force in our community. So welcome to On the Other Hand, Marquis.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
You're welcome, and we're glad to have you. Marquis, let's start by having you tell us a bit about yourself, how you got to this point in your life, and what takes up your time these days.
Oh, wow. Well, let's start with what takes up my time. I tell people often I do two things for a living. I breathe for a living and I listen for a living. And as a professional musician and of a wind instrument, I have to breathe and listen to do jazz. And so I find most of my moments breathing and listening, and especially when I'm consulting or problem solving and doing whatever type of consulting or grief support or ministry. I spend most of my days observing humanity, either through personal interactions or through television, video, and movies. I love those. Always trying to find ways to see how we just emerge into this world. I'm from Arkansas, born in the Delta, a town called Dumas, Arkansas. I'm the youngest of nine children born to a ministry family. So Christian ministry has been an intricate part of my whole life and my molding and the way I have learned to see God or see the evolution of God and spirituality and religion and all things that are belief oriented. That's pretty much how I got here, and grateful I'm a musician because it helped me learn how feeble language was when I began to experience the universality of music.
Okay. So that's a little bit about your role as a musician and as a spiritual leader. Can you tell us a little bit? I know that you recently wrote a book. You want to make a brief comment on that?
Oh, I always forget about the fact that I'm an author now because it's the newest emanation of what Marquis is. Yeah, fortunately, last year, I released my first book called The New Human, When the People We Love Love the People We Love. It's an exploration, a journey into one's own divinity, discovered or realized by changing one's relationship with love. The book asks one central question: can you make your best better? Aimed at getting people to explore and experience the limitless aspect or the limitless power of love.
Very good. That kind of mirrors something that I've always gone by. I keep thinking about growth, me personally trying to grow as much as I can. That sounds good. There's another thing that I wanted to ask you about, because I know you've been long involved in something called The Flow. Could you give us a brief overview of what that's about?
Oh, yeah. We started The Flow in 2019, officially here in Little Rock, Arkansas. Ministering or creating a space for creatives and innovatives has always been or has been a central part of my life's work, especially since the 1990s, before the turn of the century. I believe that artists and scientists are probably the true legislators of how we evolve in our culture and our civilizations, because they are, or we are, charged with innovating, if not deviating. And so what both of those things require is adjusting what is in an effort to transform it into something that it could be. And often those artists and scientists, those clairvoyants, are those who are charged with extrapolating from the universe, from the ether, what the world's possibility is. And so the flow was introduced here as a place where people could, I call it worship over improvisation. We would come into the space and I would do music. And people would just sit there and refresh on Sunday evenings. It was an opportunity for them to reboot, to get their mission, so to speak, for the week, and to go into their work week refreshed and energized. After COVID, we had to kind of go onto the internet and start doing everything through streaming. And we started that conversation that way. And then right after George Floyd, then we took the conversation into a more activist model, where we started on conversations on anti-racism and how to affect policy, and then revisit how we communicate or talk about the hegemony here in the world, especially in America.
What do you mean by hegemony? I'm just curious, Marquis.
The hegemony is what I call the culture culture operating in the background. It's the kind of the operating system that governs how we think, how we believe, how we choose, how we value, and how we place our priorities. It's the thing that determines how policies are made, and then how we build customs and practice. So that hegemony is that silent or that invisible operating system, cultural operating system, COS.
COS, cultural operating system. Okay. All right. Let me ask you this. You may know that in our conversations that we have with our various guests, they're all community leaders who in some way have been able to reach across various divides in the community. The idea to work toward common good for everyone. So I want us to hear from you. How do you fit that bill as a community leader who reaches across divisions, who promotes unity, togetherness, or a common purpose in the community?
Well, one of the things I did in 2020, we sponsored through the flow, I guess you would call it a protest, but it was kind of a conciliatory protest where we called it was a take a knee. It was in the summer of 2020. There was a lot of heat and anger toward the police force because of the George Floyd incident. What I realized one Sunday evening when I was watching kind of a mob and a riot hit, and then I saw military forces armed and aimed at stopping citizens from advancing in a protest. I had this idea that the police were not the enemy, although there were some bad apples in the police force, and that especially, of course, all Black people aren't the enemy. And there are people who are predisposed toward criminal behavior for whatever reason. And so, but I wanted to create a context where we could offer a critique of law enforcement, and while we also thank them for their service for putting themselves in harm's way in many moments. And the purpose of that rally was to appeal to people with resource who the police are essentially charged to protect. You know, police are those who protect policy, and policies are those items that are charged to create safety for people who own wealth or who own property. Unfortunately, in our culture, if you don't own anything, there really aren't any laws designed to protect you. The police aren't really obligated to protect you if you don't have something that is in a charging document or in a law. And so I think it was incumbent on people, those of us, probably at that time I was going for the baby boomers, to begin to consider what's happening now and then use their property awareness or their presence with property to appeal to the police force to stop doing harm to people. So that was one of the first things I did. Well, one of the most recent things I did that took on some major traction here in the city.
I can remember that too. And I attended that event. And one of the things I was impressed with is how you brought a lot of people from all walks of the community. You apparently had worked and coordinated enough with the city and with law enforcement. Everything went very smoothly. It was a very peaceful, positive event. I was impressed with that.
So, Marquis, one of the things that I think about as I'm listening to you talk and was looking at kind of your biography in preparation for the interview, was that you don't fit into one kind of grouping or mold. You have so many eclectic interests and people that you deal with. So this question is kind of an odd one that I would even ask, but we typically do ask our guests about their political leanings, and Braver Angels, we identify political views by color, such as red, blue, purple, or other. I'm curious where, if you're willing to say, that you might place yourself on that political color spectrum. And then I'll follow up with kind of what values and life experiences have kind of influenced or had you go in that particular direction.
Well, I would probably say indigo because it's the closest to enigma. Because I think my color is somewhat enigmatic, and I don't quite know. I could easily be conservative about quite a few things in terms of one language. I'm conservative about truth and how we appropriate or understand what truth is. I'm pretty progressive about dogma and how we come to understand what dogma is. And I try to shy away from anything that appears to be overly dogmatic because I think it undermines certain aspects of creativity and innovation. I think as a musician, the world is, especially as a jazz musician, the world is full of improvisational moments. In fact, I think each moment demands improvisation because our choices and our decisions are effectively rearranging and transforming the world into something different. It's incumbent upon us to see, to be as alert as we can be. So at some point, I may take a conservative spin in an effort to, one, protect innovation. I'm very conservative about protecting innovation. And then I could look very liberal because I am all about innovation and transformation.
And one of the things I really like about that is that sometimes things that we see as might be opposites or even the same, we can look at them through different lenses. So, you know, truth and dogma, some people would say, well, that's kind of similar. You know, and innovation and protecting innovation seem, you know, like you've got, you know, this value system. It sounds like that you have the value systems that you have are complex. Try to understand kind of how they all fit together.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm grateful you said the word complex because it's my choice word. Often I get the word, Marcus, you're so complicated. And I say, no, I'm not complicated. I'm complex. And because I think there are many layers. I often talk about life or love through the lens of jazz. One of my phrases is learn to love like jazz. And not that jazz is the only musical art form, but what I think jazz does, certainly not, maybe not necessarily exclusively, but certainly is learn how to find more and more music in the same space of time. And, you know, if you just take a measure, a staff, a measure with four beats, you could, that four beats can be a whole note, it can be two half notes, it can be four quarter notes, it could be eight notes or 16 notes or any combination of the two. And the more expert the musician, the more expert their awareness, the more music they can see in a moment. And I think as we escalate or improve into better awareness, we're able to see more in the same space of time than we would have, or than those who are limited in their perspective on what is truth or what isn't truth. Oftentimes we call truth based on what we see, but not necessarily with the awareness that there are things we still don't see, or in the case of jazz, things we still don't hear. I would always listen to a person like David Sanborn or John Coltrane or one singer, Kim Burrell, and they would hit a note sometimes, and I would say, how in the world did they hear that note? Like, where did it come from? Like, I've been playing music for years. So I've never heard that note in this space and time. How did they do it? How did they land on it? And so I think My ascent into spirituality is always learning to see more of what presents itself. And even when I go back into my past, I try to look for the love I missed when I was in the moment.
Well, I'd love to hear a little bit about how in your past you actually got to the place where you can see this complexity and be able to look for the music in the moment.
Well, it was largely through performance. I am growing up in a Pentecostal church and playing music by ear. Music is a large part of our culture. And as a performer, and I was always told, especially as an instrumentalist, if you want people to really get with you, you have to play music they know. So the music or the notes I would have to play a song that had lyrics to it, because if I played something abstract, it diminished the chances of my ability to communicate with the audience. Until one moment, I felt compelled to kind of just spontaneously, or what I would have called prophetically, begin to play music that was coming to me in the moment. And then I saw something happen with the audience or the congregation. It touched them in a whole different space. And I realized then that language was more than about words. And that music had the ability to transcend language. And then I began to do a lot of study and innovation about language and how words, the transliteration of things, evolves probably every 20 to 30 years. And I got into trouble with some churches back in the 90s because I think they thought it was a mistake. I said there was nothing holy about the word Jesus. It was in a course I was teaching called Language Exchange when I offered the factoid that the letter J didn't emerge until the 17th century. And so I challenged them to ask what would the word Jesus sound like, or especially in the evangelical tradition, unless you confess Jesus, you can't be saved. And so I said, what happened in the first 1600 years where there are no Christians, because there was no Jesus to be said? And so I just, it allowed me to lift their perspective into, essentially to open up the jazz, or open up the chord, so they could see that language was not just about the words. Donald Spoto, in one of his books, I think it was called The Hidden Jesus, he said, and this was a transformative moment for me. He said, language, when it's spoken, is just a series of grunts and moans that have mean something because a consensus of people agreed they mean something. And language, when it is written, is just a series of lines and strokes. And so at that moment, I felt my liberation to realize that none of these things, none of these symbols were what the truth was. They were just a map, a legend, so to speak, to guide me into what I call the essence. So even when I talk about truth, I believe in truth. I understand that truth is not that it's evolving, but we are. And we get better at seeing it if we can yield to the humility of knowing we need to learn. And if we need to learn, it necessitates that we have to change.
And you have done that over the years, clearly.
Well, don't ask my ex-wife.
Oh, we won't go down there, that road today.
Or I should say my kid's mom. That's a better way of saying it. My kid's mom.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. I've already blown through a couple of questions I think that you've covered. One was going to be about your role as a musician, but I think I can't ask this much of it. You know, as a musician, as you've pointed out, it is another way of communicating, of conveying meaning and sharing, you know, information or meaning and emotions. So could you share your perspective on the role that music might play in bringing people together, and whether or not there might be any lessons there that could apply to any of us in society who are different, but could benefit from finding a way to work cooperatively together for a common purpose? That probably is kind of a complicated question. Did that make sense?
Well, no, I get it. First, I would start by saying, of course we're different. We are all different. We cannot help but be different. And I think music accepts that as a part of the foundation of what it is. Symphony is an amalgam, a combination of several different sounds, several different frequencies, several different tones, several different vibrations, several different rhythms, sometimes even silence. So music, when it's demonstrated, it suggests that there could be disagreement, or certainly dissonance. But what I like to say is music helps us understand how to accept difference without disagreement. And it also helps us understand when disagreement is happening. And disagreement, like if you take music, for instance, a half note, a C and a B, and you play them next to each other on the piano, you'll hear this tension happening in the tonality. There's nothing wrong with either one of those notes. But often to play them together, you have to include another note, or you have to space them so far apart that the thing that appears as disagreement presents itself as harmony and fusion. And so music, for many of us unconsciously, has a way of touching us in our bodies, our minds, our agency, and tapping into our frequencies, because we're energy. And when music is good, I think, and intentional and expert, it has a way of massaging our consciousness, massaging our emotions, massaging our hearts. And it feels like it's happening as if we don't know it. But our natural inclination, I believe, as life beings is to lean into those things that give us life. And we naturally do that unless we're sick. When we lean away from life, it's because we are diseased, and we are at war with ourselves or war with the collective, whatever that self is. And so music, I think, reminds us that our humanity is what I would call a human event. And so one of the ways I aim at helping people come together is by bringing to our attention that each of us in our humanity represent the collective human event. We are still an organism happening to the earth. And I think we have learned in the hegemony, we have misunderstood this, and we have elevated our individuality at the expense of the unit of the human event. And even to the environment.
Interesting. So it sounds like, in a way, you're getting at people are very different. And when you have all this diversity of people, they still, if they come together and have a common purpose and each play their proper role, you can have this beautiful event like a symphony.
Absolutely. We have fleeting moments. We have visitations of this harmony, more than we have residence in it.
How do you mean?
If we resided in the harmony, we would see the manifestation of the unity, rather than the crime and the war and the fighting and the divisiveness. When we imagine our bodies, just this individual unit. I know this is audio, so you can't see me pointing, but. If a person were to point to their whole body, the body is itself replete with gazillions of individuated units, cells and molecules and atoms. It all depends on how infinitesimal you want to break them apart. But when it's healthy, it operates with the type of organic unconscious synthesis, where everything is supporting the other thing. If I lift my leg to walk, my back naturally understands, but sometimes my back is hurting, and then it resists the move. And when we see, if we can extrapolate or juxtapose the human individual into the human collective, and see that when we are as a civilization or a community experiencing this type of pain, it suggests that there is something that is maladjusted, and it is now fighting against itself, aimed at causing something to suffer. And so our bodies can show us this. Music can even show us this if we paid attention. So we have moments, as you say. It could be a holiday gathering, a birthday party, a football game. We have moments where we visit into this unity. And we can see how much beauty and that hive, how we can create that hive. And but those are visitations. The Super Bowl is a visitation. The Arkansas Razorback is a visitation where people who don't seem to agree on many things can come to agree on this thing. I would argue that it's kind of a carnal or superficial way to come to agreement. But it does serve as sufficient to teach us that the capacity and the potential exist. And so that's what I mean by the visitation. We visit there more than we reside there.
Okay. It makes me suspect that if we want to reside there and have something common that we're all kind of in agreement with, it might be akin to following maybe a certain set of values. But anyway, that's just one thought.
Well, Glenn, we've run out of time for now, but we have so many more things to talk about with Marquis Hunt, so I hope folks will stay tuned for the second part of our conversation with him. Well, thanks for joining us today on this edition of On the Other Hand. This has been the first part of our conversation with Marquis Hunt. And we hope that you check out the second part of this conversation, as well as other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. You can find us on the podcast page of the Braver Angels Arkansas website, and that's at arkansas.braverangels.org. Again, that's arkansas.braverangels.org, or on many popular podcast sites.
And when you visit our website, in addition to the links to all those episodes that we've had in the past, you'll find a link to email us at otherhandar@gmail.com. That's otherhandar@gmail.com, where you can provide us with feedback about the program or about any speakers you might suggest.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, Glenn White,
and April Chatham Carpenter,
let's each do our part to bring our community closer together.